It is Michael Askins, architect and technologist. And I'm starting this show off just a wee bit different than normal because this is like your, I'm going to show my age here, your after school special. This is your, you know, movie of the week. This is going to be a little bit of a different show, but it is for all audiences. And I want everyone to stay here and listen to this, whether you're a technology leader, whether you're a data scientist, whether you are one that spins wrenches on artificial intelligence. There's a little bit of everything for all of you during this episode. And you can tell right off the bat, I didn't start with my own talking head. I have Professor Chris Aferlis with us. Sorry, I can't help that. It just works for me. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, man. I mean, more importantly, should we talk about your beloved Penguins? Or do we want to go there? Are you still in mourning, or do we?
Very much so. Yeah. For those of you who are audio only, I hang my head in shame and
I'm sorry. It's hard to be having such a great year and you know, on the flip side here. But hopefully, we get back to it next year.
Well, the way I look at it is, if it's black and gold, it's good. So
we got to figure out a way to come up with a wager to get one of us to either location to do this. I think we got to figure out something here.
Yeah, we will. We will. You know, we should have like just a banter show just on all things between Boston and here. But I always said Boston has always treated me good. I don't have a problem with Boston.
Yeah. Good. Most people do.
Well, boo on them. So aside from my beloved flightless birds being ejected out of the playoffs for the first time in 17 years, how you been? What's been going on?
Oh, what hasn't been going on, man? It's crazy. It's great, but crazy, you know. Obviously, you know, we're here to talk about something really special, and it's been a culmination of crazy enough 18 months. You know, we're coming to the end of the semester. You know, the Microsoft fiscal ends in 2 months, right? So it's a little busy. Oh, and you know, we've got the school play coming up this weekend, 3 performances. Nice. By my 2 daughters, you know, so you know, a couple things going on, right?
That's a few.
Yeah.
So we have some recordings in the bank and some things to be released that you and I have done. Any updates on that you want to talk on?
Yeah. We added another thing to the pile, of course. You know, as I kind of reflected back on some of our previous shows, you know, great conversation, real good discussion points and great education opportunities for our listeners. But, you know, I think it'd be great to add some video context to it, right? We obviously have the video recordings, you know, my YouTube channel, your YouTube channel, right? And put some context around that, be able to visually help people get an idea of the concepts that we've been talking about. So also in the works, you know, and look for those in the next couple months here, where I'll be dropping those on the YouTube and sharing out on platforms and stuff like that. And hopefully it kind of gives people a chance to see things in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I was going to use the phrase pine and yearn for, but one of the things I really want is engagement, right? Yeah. And I think that there's a lot more engagement in the visual aspect. It's hard when people, and this is what I've been told directly by some of our listeners who've actually caught me on the street or what have you. They're like, it's really hard. You ask for us to engage, but I'm on the treadmill when I listen to you.
Right,
it's like,
right.
I don't expect you to fall off and be on America's Funniest Videos or, you know, Fail Army. We don't want that to happen. So right. don't engage when you're driving or commuting. A lot of our listeners, I'm a commute voice for a lot of people. So, but the platform of video, you know, your attention is normally there and that engagement is usually increased. So that's brilliant. Along that line, I'm going to tease a couple things too, some other shows that unfortunately I didn't have you on, but maybe we can get throughout all these outlets. I have a security summit. I was on with some Solutions for Network Security team members, and we talked about the state of security, specifically around with a bunch of the tech layoffs and what's going on. And somehow security seems to be unaffected. We discussed that. We discussed some vendor stuff. You know, you and I have always had security as a thread. So we just continue on with that tone. And we also have, Microsoft will be pleased to know, we also had a Chris Bomba from Solutions for Networks, and we did a little bit of a compare and contrast between WebEx and Teams. So you'll be delighted to hear, you know, the different options and things that are out there for organizations that have WebEx or Teams or trying to decide which platform to go to. So we have that kind of in the bank too as well. In upcoming, aside from this show and the stuff that we are going to co-release here, we also have some E911 discussions around the collaboration space. So that's kind of cool too.
Great. But, yeah. And then when are we going to do a bake-off with Zoom?
Well, I think we know who won that one already. We can. There's, you know, we could do Zoom, Blue Jeans, Meet versus Teams. Let's just take them all on hand.
Lump them all together. Give them the credit. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you know, in the education space, you know, they're very generous and stuff. And so Zoom got a real big head start. And so it's sort of the primary platform for, you know, for my education side of things. As much as I'm trying to pull people over to the good team, it's definitely challenging. So, you know, I think it'd be good for some people to hear what those differences are, right? Obviously WebEx is probably the old dog, right? That probably needs to be brought out to pasture at this point, you know, and I didn't even listen to the pod. So, but I'm just knowing the platform. But, you know, Zoom has obviously done some amazing things with their growth and stuff over the last couple of years, obviously related to the pandemic and whatnot. So would be interesting, too. So just a little note suggestion there.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, we'll definitely take that on. The one thing I did find rather shocking was the cloud contact center that Cisco has. It actually integrates
with
Teams and Dynamics really well. It's the more modern Cisco WebEx offering. It's a cloud, you know, and it's just amazing. Chris did a demo several months back and I was just blown away of the capabilities. And you know, with direct routing, sometimes it's both, this is not why we're here, but we're going to do it anyways. Sometimes both work, right? You know, sometimes you need to have that, you know, on premises, you know, if you don't have audio codes, devices that wire in your systems. But yeah, long story short,
listen. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's cool. And I mean, you know, just one more point on that, right, is when you think about it and that integration, I mean, that really does speak to the partner ecosystem that Microsoft has, right? And, you know, granted, we are a software company, right? But we're also a platform company. And we realize that having strong relationships is good for everybody, you know? Right. And so, it's another feather in the cap, if you will.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. So our very special episode kicks off now. Now we're all warmed up, the throat's lean, we're ready to go. So if I wanted a practical guide to Azure Cognitive Services, where would I go and get that?
Well, it just so happens that in about 3 weeks' time, if everything goes well and I can get the work done that they need, you'll be able to go to Amazon and find a freshly minted copy that takes you through the ins and outs of a fictitious seafood company, somewhat driven from my past experience being a CIO for a couple of seafood companies for a good chunk of time, almost 15 years probably between the two. And, you know, really taking us down opportunities for increasing customer satisfaction, optimizing operations, removing waste and cost, and some really fun stuff there. And, you know, again, this is 18 months in the making. 18 years would be a really long time.
Probably feels like it, though, huh?
Yeah, it does at times. You know, but it's been really great. I was actually approached originally about 2 years ago from Pact after one of my YouTube videos. Strangely enough, you know, a 5-minute video on Azure Cognitive Services, and they approached me about writing a book on it in more of a practical implementation guide. Somewhat intermediate level to be able to take those services and deploy them and you know, some use cases on how they could be used.
So I believe the company's name is OceanSmart, right?
Correct.
Yep. So that's a great way to frame it. It's, you know, it's almost along the lines of the DevOps book, where we walked through that company and we had the stories of all the different type of personnel and how, so taking that approach really connect, like it was like, I was hung on that concept of, it's almost like a Netflix series, right? Yeah. you get connected. It's not some abstract real company that you're thinking, oh yeah, having that, like, okay, here's this company, this is how this is what their goals are, this is what their objectives are, really gets you connected, right? It's kind of like, are you familiar with KnowBe4, the security training organization?
Oh, yeah.
So KnowBe4, I'm addicted to KnowBe4 because of that mentality. It's like watching little movies, and this is the same approach. So I appreciate that approach.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's an awesome reference, actually. I mean, that I listened to that book on audio, and I mean, yeah, it just pulled you in, right? It was a great story. I would be tremendously just flattered if somebody made that comparison after they read this one, because I don't think I get to that level of storytelling and looping the themes together, because they really did want more of a practical guide to this. Sure. But you know, it definitely does sort of look at the experiences I had over a long period of time, and you know, both from a leadership position and understanding, you know, what the important things were to the businesses that I worked in, as well as understanding, you know, what the technical challenges were, and some of those discussion points when thinking about things like AI. And ways that it could impact the business. You know, it's not the easiest subject, and you have to be able to put some kind of visual around what you're trying to describe. And so I'm hoping that, you know, some of these chapters that were significantly longer than originally planned, and you know, the amount of care and detail that I put into the writing, as well as the examples that my co-authors, you know, really helped with and helped build, two very close colleagues, another Microsoft colleague, as well as, you know, another gentleman I've worked with for many years. And really, we wanted to make it real and give the opportunity to provide some type of real world scenario. It is geared primarily toward manufacturing. But that doesn't mean that the use cases wouldn't apply across the board.
Yeah. Well, if you think of it, manufacturing facilities, they have accounting, they have HR, they have all the same components that every other organization has. So you need to solve for that, right? So if your product is turning out shrimp and seafood and you're turning out widgets and metal parts, there's a lot of connections that can happen there, even through industry, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And really, I mean, it's a great point, because it, you know, where we do have, you know, sort of that shop floor mentality in a couple of the chapters and the way we approach things, you know, I think of specifically like the cognitive vision chapter, where we look at, you know, the ability of running quality control against produced lobster tails, for instance, where, you know, we want to detect if a lobster tail is missing a flipper or has a crack or is discolored and things like that. You know, and so that's very specific to manufacturing and sort of how you approach that. But then also, when you think about, we've got an anomaly detector chapter where we look at the freezer components and you know what it means if your freezer tolerances are out of range and sort of how to measure that and set the ranges and all of the other components, you know, when we look at an IoT capability and all of the things that you could, you know, slap an IoT device on for measuring, you know, vibration and heat and fan speeds and you know, noises even, you know, and all this other stuff that is really cool in the manufacturing environment. But then, you know, we do a whole block in the book. It's four chapters of really just knowledge mining and, you know, how can knowledge mining impact a company? And for those unaware, knowledge mining is sort of the next evolution of document management systems and enterprise search kind of all in one, mm-hmm. where, you know, And those examples touch the whole business and sort of how to surface this dark data that it is really plaguing a lot of organizations. You know, any research on dark data and the impact that it has on organizations, you know, the estimated amount of dark data that most organizations have is like 70 to 80%. Wow. Where, you know, that could be really valuable information for, you know, whether it be machine learning models or better ways to serve customers or even setting up a graph between some of these documents and various assets, because it goes far beyond documents, right? We're talking media, we're talking images and all that kind of stuff as well. You know, and some of the other chapters, you know, chatbot with natural language and translation and those types of things where you have that ability to, you know, work in a global environment. And you know, I think what's important to realize for the consumers is that this could be as simple as a Skunk Works project, right? You know, where you kind of throw some consumer grade things together to test it out, build a POC, play around. You know, most of the services have free tiers, right? Which kind of, nothing's ever free, right? but you know, you got minimal storage costs, minimal networking costs and stuff like that, right? And so, you know, you think about those types of things, and then you look at the broader picture and sort of how you can impact an organization more broadly as well.
For sure. So here's a question for you. So a lot of the times, it's maybe an organization wants to learn about this. They have a cursory understanding or a deep understanding, or like, okay, we want to go next level, and they pick up the book and they're going through it chapter by chapter. And then, you know, a thought will cross their mind like, oh yeah, I'm just not going to put this in play in practicality because it's going to cost too much. You address that in the book, right?
Very much so. Just about every chapter, you're going to find, you know, business objectives, business outcomes, and, you know, TCO and ROI, you know, total cost of ownership and return on investment. It's sort of the way that my brain works, you know, especially in the seafood business, it's a very low margin business. And so, you know, every penny kind of counts. And if you can make a case, you know, to your boss or your boss's boss, you know, as to what impact you feel this deployment you know, workload or whatever you want to call it is going to have on the business. If you can bring that out, I try to give a lot of hints on things you want to look at, right? You know, I can't dictate what's going to happen in every situation, but very much concerned with how do we justify these types of activities? How do we make sure that we don't have cost overruns? How do we project out what it's going to cost for a full production workload, right? I try to cover all of those areas in varying depths, depending on the chapter and things like that. But, you know, really those first few chapters focus on beyond the cognitive services. What are businesses doing? What are the additional Azure services beyond cognitive services that we're going to need to think about and implement as part of a solution? You know, and so I really wanted to set the stage for people to understand, you know, some of the challenges that OceanSmart had. Some may be very, very much true to life, and some are a little bit more peripheral with my experience. But then, you know, going deeper and looking at trying to look at all the components there.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So understanding the components, understanding your data, understanding what potential solution targets there are. What about skills? What kind of skills is required for the reader of this book to practically implement one of these solutions?
You know, it's funny because cognitive services always lands in the data and AI space from a bucketing category here at Microsoft, you know, and you think of the Azure world and data and AI specialists and things like that. But in reality, the best skill you can have is probably like C# or Python. Mm-hmm. Because there is a fair amount of code, you know, knowledge and understanding around REST and calling REST APIs and understanding, you know, the difference between the headers and the bodies and things like that. And having at least some understanding of Python or C#, we gear most of the chapters towards Python because it's kind of the most universal, I would say.
Yeah.
you know, it's not an absolute, but I would say the majority of the services, you know, support Python amongst C Sharp and other languages as well. But there are, you know, the services are all developed independently, right? And each of the product groups for each of the services has their own flavor of how they roll out the services and what languages they do support. So really, beyond that, you know, working knowledge of Azure, how the portal works, how to get around navigation, you know, your subscriptions, how a resource group works, I kind of lay those out just so people understand. We talk about some high availability stuff and various zones, you know, and those types of things. But if you've got a foundation, at least in some Python programming or, like I said, C Sharp, have a basic knowledge of REST and, you know, how to use Postman to do some testing on REST, that's certainly going to help. And just kind of overall knowledge of Azure. The machine learning piece is taken care of for you, right? It's you know, whether you're building a custom model, like I use the custom vision use case there. If I'm building that custom model, I'm walked through those steps with Microsoft and I'm not dealing with the algorithms based on those models. And then, you know, as the tools mature, you get more, you know, visual editors, GUIs that are available to work with the different tools. But at the same time, they all have that code in the background. So, yeah. You know, I mean, if you got to start on a custom vision service, customvision.ai, you know, you could spin up your own custom vision model in a couple of hours.
Yeah. So if I were to recommend this book to say a VP of IT, a CIO, what are, you know, I'm going to say top three, but just if it's one or five or whatever, what are the top takeaways you want that more strategic, non-technical handed individual to pull from this? Because I believe that this is going to satisfy, again, the broader audience, but also the pinpoint data person that or data scientist or tech. What's the key takeaways you want that business leader or that decision maker or somebody that says, I'm going to get my teams to look at this deeper?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think number one is definitely evaluating the value of implementing an AI solution, you know, a cognitive service in your organization or a collection of cognitive services in your organization. Breaking down how to evaluate whether it will make the impact that they think it will, you know, and then, you know, sort of adjacent to that, whether you want to call it a second or a part B, is really being able to make your case one way or the other, right? I reference the phrase that I use frequently, you know, in let's implement technology for the sake of technology, right? And I'm against that. You know, people love technology, they love the new stuff, they love whiz bang. But if it doesn't provide the value that you know, can bring back to the organization, then it's probably not a great idea. If you're being forced to do it because, you know, somebody thinks it's going to provide that detail, I have a very sobering conversation that just says, that's great. You know, if you push back, it could be career suicide for that particular organization. Yep. You know, so tread lightly, you know, and make your case with data rather than emotion.
Yep. That's a good point.
You know, I think the scenarios that I put together can take you through different personas and where you sit, whether it's in finance or operations or IT or leadership. And being able to understand how to approach these various scenarios, you know, from a technology and again, value standpoint, I would say, you know, that's probably another great outcome. And then really, ultimately, giving you ideas about where there could be opportunity for this, right? So, some of the scenarios are very, very, very much real life things that I faced and said, I bet we could do something with this to somewhat a little bit out there, right? Where, you know, it the devil could be in the details for the implementation. But the idea is to just kind of spur any kind of thought around what you could use it for.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to segue a little bit into the experience of building this content for us to consume, right? This book is labor of love, as everybody says. You know, what was the hardest thing about producing this book? And again, you have two other authors with you, right? So yeah. I'm sure the collaboration and the timing, I'm sure those challenges are, I mean, that's just the nature of having a day job and doing a book too, right?
Right.
But what was the most challenging part you found building this?
That was the hardest part, truthfully. It was the collaboration components of it. If I had the time and capacity to be able to do it all myself, I would have loved to, right? I would have loved to build the examples just how I had them in my head. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to take that time to provide those full solutions. But I mean, 18 months is a really long time when you think that originally they wanted it in 6 months, right? And so the more people that get involved, the bigger the challenge, because, you know, you've got, you know, families and real work and, you know, all those types of things. That was pretty challenging. I had to be the whip cracker, you know, and I did the majority of the writing, but sort of taking that vision, and helping guide, my co-authors through where I was trying to go with that. That was pretty challenging at times, because it was sort of a lot of stops and starts.
Sure.
When I write my next book,
again. That was one of my questions.
It is a labor of love. I will say that, the creative process, those days when you're just in flow state. I mean, I can remember one weekend I was working on it and I banged out like 1500 words of just awesome material in like a couple hours time, you know, and I was so on point. And then, you know, there were other days I'd sit in front of a blank piece of paper for a couple hours, you know? And so that writer's block is real. It can be very challenging. But I would say, if anybody's even considering it, and actually PACT has a program where they'll recommend that you talk to another author, you know, who's gone through the process. So I actually had a couple people reach out to me during the process to ask me, you know, my thoughts on all that. And it was just that. Set aside time every day, you know, and dedicate that time every single day. Because honestly, even if you take a few days off, you kind of lose momentum, you lose your place, you have to kind of go back to where your thought process was, you know, and all that kind of stuff. I will say, as a publisher, PACT did a really good job of giving me a bit of a North Star when it came to, the chapters and the content. The original outline was a bit ambitious, I will say. It weren't quite able to pull through all of the examples that I originally thought of and things like that. But, you know, it's when you dive deeper into the technology, you kind of understand the limitations of it, you know. And so that was part of it. Part of it was just the practical nature. I mean, if we delivered the full original knowledge mining chapter that I wanted to, I mean, that chapter probably would have been 100 pages as opposed to, you know, 30 or 40 or whatever it is now.
It's own book.
Yeah. I mean, the book was supposed to be originally 300. I think we ended at like 500 or something. So I write the same way I talk. I'm very verbose. it would definitely be to just set aside an hour a day. And then when you're in flow state, if you can do it, keep going, you know.
Mm-hmm. Which chapter was your favorite?
Oh boy.
It's like, it's almost like at this point, it's an unfair question. It's like saying, who's your favorite kid? Right?
I would say probably the custom vision, because I primarily built that, I built the model, I trained the model, I set up the whole example, you know, so I kind of did that chapter start to finish, except for the last portion. One of my colleagues kind of tied in the API and calling the API and stuff like that. But, you know, for the most part, I mean, I'd say that one gave me the most satisfaction, because I was able to dig into the tech you know, come back to my tech roots a little bit. And yeah, that one was pretty fun to put together. It was also one of the first ones that we finished. So, you know, it was kind of like that sense of pride and accomplishment from it. Yeah. So, I mean, I'd say that one. And really, those examples are true every day, you know. And yeah, so, you know, just a DIY home example, right? If you wanted to do your own DIY using AI to detect whether your garage door was open, you know, I mean, obviously there are other systems that can do that. But, you know, I mean, being able to compare an image of a closed door versus an open door, being able to accommodate various stages of light throughout the day or darkness, you know, and being able to accommodate all those types of things. You could do it, you know, you could take various pictures and sort of build your model. And then, you know, all the capabilities are there to be able to, you know, send a notification, you know, through service bus or you know, whatever, right?
But so, the logic app to shut the door because it should be shut.
Precisely, right? Or you know, or prompt you on a power app to say, do you want to shut the door, right? Yeah. So yeah, I mean, that one was pretty cool. Overall, we built a full portal for all of the examples. So going through and designing that and what the user experience would be like, albeit rudimentary, right? Nothing crazy, but we use a Django portal, that basically taps into all the services. We're sort of trying to come up with a way to, facilitate users and readers of the book to be able to play with those examples. Mm-hmm. The challenge with that, of course, is how do you avoid cost overruns in the Azure environment and stuff like that. And so we haven't quite nailed down the exact approach, but we do have a portal that users can use, and we have some screenshots and stuff like that. Plus all the code will be available. So if you wanted to deploy your own Django portal along those lines, you could.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that's, it's good about your approach, and you know, not just the chapter outline and the storytelling, it's beyond that, right? So it's in the title, it's practical, right? So, you know, way back in the day when Raspberry Pis and Arduinos came out, I'm a big IoT guy, right? You mm-hmm. would get that, here's this big book, and you get your Raspberry Pi and you're like, plug this one LED in,
right?
And then when you're done with the chapter, you lit the LED up. And then you're sitting there, you're like, now the next, now go light Shea Stadium or go turn right. on, you know, I'm dating myself by talking about Shea Stadium, but it's kind of like that. There's like a disconnect between real world and being yeah. able to interface with something at a basic level.
Yeah.
And the way that the story is told is, you know, it throws a reader right into a real world situation that they can extrapolate to themselves, but then they get connected to, you know, get connected to Ocean and what's going to happen and how we're going to, you know, make things better. So
yeah,
that approach is like, that's brilliant. It's the next step, right?
Yeah. I mean, if we come around to doing a version two of the book, you know, to update, you know, some of the changes to the service and stuff, I definitely identified some areas where, you know, I might be able to expand on the story or, maybe build a better example and things like that. But you know, at this point we've got working examples, we've got, you know, a good story. You know, I'm obviously going to be my own biggest critic. You know, but you know, I definitely have identified as I'm going through the final editing process where it's like, okay, you know what, you know, if we do a rev two of this, I can probably elaborate further and immerse the reader a little deeper into those scenarios.
So this is going to be such a loaded question. So the fictitious organization Ocean Smart, is it the next Contoso?
You know, what's funny is there is a company, I believe it's a software company that called Ocean Smart. I realized after the fact. So I don't think so. you know, but you know, again, it was something we made up on the fly, and we make it very clear that it's a fictitious company, and you know, any personas that are described are not about any one person. It's kind of my opportunity to make these amalgamated personas as we're going through that you know that process of understanding the use case.
Yeah. So the next book then, Ocean Smart has to get acquired by something you can use next 10 books.
Yeah. That'd be fantastic. Just keep the next book talked down. My wife is ready to kill me for the first book. So she's already made it very clear that book number two is going to be a ways off.
Absolutely. Well, you just got to promise me when this hits the top New York Times top list that I can do the MC the event for it. So I'll fly out there.
Fantastic. I'll do a book signing right there in Pittsburgh.
That's awesome. Anything else that runs subtext? I'm going to qualify this in a second, but subtext in the book. I know how your brain works because I've known you for long enough. There's always those little bits of Azure, the things that aren't necessarily in the title of the book. Is there any subtext in here that is, that maybe again, a leader, a CTO, a director, they're looking at this, they know enough. They're like, okay, well, here's these other things that we talk about in Azure that maybe I need to look at. Is there any kind of tangential or subtext tech that you talk about?
I would say the theme that comes to mind most is keep it simple, stupid, right? Start simple. And I mean, I work with my customers the exact same way. Start simple, start small, gain some momentum, implement something that works, show the value, and then get the whole organization behind it, right? Get that. Really, like I said, display that value to the business and help them realize where you can go with it. Right. And so if you can be a storyteller along with a technologist, it's going to really help you, your career, all those kinds of things.
Yeah. So we know that you talk about GPT-4, some of the AI capabilities. We got to somehow weasel that into the title of this show just because everybody's searching for that right now. So maybe we'll get a little bit of an extra runway there.
Yeah. Yeah. And as I was writing that, it was tough because stuff was changing every day. And even after the first draft of the OpenAI chapter was done, more information was coming out, right? Yeah. And so you got to stop at some point, right? I mean that's the nature of technology. And I remember very early in the process, my first editor that I was working with, he's just like, look, it's going to continue to change. It's going to continue to evolve. There's nothing you can do about it. Just hopefully there aren't major changes that make whatever you're writing about completely irrelevant, right? Yeah. In our chatbot and natural language processing / translator chapter, Microsoft was going through this transition of Lewis to language understanding, and they are different. Right. Even though it's not Lewis is short for language understanding, blah, blah, blah. It they are different. And the Lewis service is somewhat being put out to pasture, in the long game. Right. I think 2025 is when it starts to, start being shut off or kind of thing. So there's plenty of time, plenty of runway, but they hadn't yet integrated the language understanding components into the bot framework yet. Right. And so that was redundant. And so we reference it and are able to at least speak to language understanding from what we could, but that direct integration wasn't there yet. Now, mind you, it'll be roughly the same process, right? But you gotta pull out Lewis, put in language understanding, and you might have to do a little bit of poking around to find the exact thing that you're looking for. That's certainly a challenging thing. But with the OpenAI and ChatGPT, working with the editors, the product manager, and things like that, it was clear that we really had to do something with it, right? And at first it was like, man, I'm just trying to get this thing off my desk, and he's just like, look, there's so much demand for this, let's be one of the first books out there with some real detail on it, and so there we go,
Yep. Well, being a front runner and having the understanding of the tech that you do makes it easy to be a leader in the space. So, I'm hoping our listeners will, key in, get the book, connect, communicate, collaborate, do whatever you got to do to help your organization out and use this as a resource to spring yourself forward on the backs of knowledge of Chris and his co-authors too, as well. Is there any, sorry.
You know, and I would say, you know, to that point, if, you know, there are areas of improvement, talk about it. Let us know, right? If you've got suggestions for Rev 2, tell me. You know what I mean? Like how can we improve it? You know, how can we provide what, you know, you'd find more valuable, you know, and help us make it better and help us help you, kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So technically, I think we covered some good concepts. We covered the way the book's laid out. What we didn't cover out is any shout outs. I obviously your family gets the first shout out, I'm sure. I'm speaking for you. I know you, but yeah. Is there any shout outs for, you know, the support and to make this a reality for you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, honestly, so my co-authors, you know, obviously they put a lot of time and effort into it. And, you know, we've put together what we believe is a really good opportunity for people to learn and implement these technologies, you know, mm-hmm. So I definitely would be remiss if I didn't mention them. And really just working with Microsoft, working for Microsoft, that affords me that ability to help our customers, right? And you know, being able to tap into resources here that, you know, maybe a non-employee wouldn't be able to get to, right? And being able to leverage the smart people I work with, you know, to really get a good handle on, you know, what the intent of the service is or some of the capabilities. Actually have several reviewers from Microsoft that did technical reviews of the chapters and things like that. So, you know, my colleagues were excellent, really, really supportive. And of course my family has been tremendous.
Yeah. Any final thoughts? Anything else that I may have? I mean, it's a lot. I mean, that topic is a lot to cover. So, you know, we will put some links, pre-orders out already, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The only disappointment is that they haven't updated the title on the pre-order page. So, because we made a couple of tweaks, you know, it's one of those things where when the, you know, I use the term masterpiece is complete, right? You kind of step back and you say, okay, how is this different from what you originally intended? And so we definitely made some tweaks around, you know, how we wanted to approach it, what audience we wanted to cater it toward, you know, and so hopefully that comes through in the book, right? You know, I, the subheading escapes me off the top of my head, but, you know, it is about that, you know, how to improve the customer experience, optimize operations and reduce costs for your organization. If that doesn't come through in the book, I would be disappointed, right? Because that is how I work with my customers. That is how I did my own consulting throughout the years. You know, and it's really about driving that value and helping our customers to embrace the technology that can really be transformational for their organization.
Yeah, I am sure it's there because, you know, that's a core value that you have of being able to, you know, connect and think and make sure that the value is there for people and how it works. So, you know, in your words historically and in your words written and spoken and how you act is there. So I'm sure you hit the mark.
Yeah. I there are some, you know, random phrases and stuff that drove me crazy because I'd see it over and over again. And it's just like, you know, those types of things drive you nuts, right? I mean, you know, when you hear your own voice, you really have to get yourself used to it and stuff like that. So that type of stuff comes through. But yeah, no, I'm really proud of this book and I really think people are going to like it.
Yep, absolutely. So kind of wrapping up for today, we're going to have some links in the show notes. This will obviously be on audio, but we're going to do video too as well. Again, as we said at the top of the hour, make sure that you stay connected to both Chris's channel and our podcast channels. You'll get links to a bunch of more stuff coming out, more better. Chris and I are talking about having more regular because it's, you know, our conversations are always good and thought provoking, and I get the best feedback when we're in a room together or virtually room together.
Absolutely.
I will still mourn my flightless birds not making the playoff.
I'm sorry.
But yeah, I know. Aside from that, just again, we want to, you know, thank everybody for, you know, listening, watching, following. Again, as I cannot express my gratitude to Solutions for Networks for helping make this possible. You know, we have some great sponsorship in historically in the past. This is by far the best we've had, specifically around the runway and the promotion of not just Solutions for Networks, but us as technologists. And you'll see a lot more coming out. So stay connected to their social feeds, there being Solutions for Networks, LinkedIn and Twitter, the whole shebang. It's all out there. So again, thank you for our landmark sponsor. Aside from that, I think we nailed it for today. Official release. It's good stuff. And aside from that, I think we'll see everybody else on the next side, right?
Yeah, we'll see you soon.
All righty. Have a good one. Thank you.